BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
If you were cast away on a desert island and you could only take 8 pieces of music, one book and one luxury item with you, what would you choose? It's a very difficult decision to make, but we at Desert Island Discs have been asking our guests, who come from all different walks of life, to make those very hard choices for more than 80 years. We've got such a huge archive. There are hundreds and hundreds of programmes available to listen to. But if you want to dip in, where do you start? I've been presenting Desert Island Discs since 2018, but I've been a listener for much longer, and it's always lovely to share a bit of guidance. So today, I've got Vic Hope with me from Radio 1. Welcome, Vic.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit about your show and what you do at Radio 1.
So I do 2 shows on Radio 1. I do Drive Time, which is called Going Home with Vic and Jordan, with the incredible Jordan North, who is just a real diamond, like one of the best people I've ever met. And it's chaos. It goes in all directions. You never know what's going to happen. It's very listener driven. We have a really, really lovely community of listeners who just like to see how far they can push us before we get sacked, which we're just trying to keep our jobs, really. And then on Sundays, I do a show called Life Hacks with Katie Thistleton, who is also an angel. I'm so lucky. I have the best people I get to chat to on the radio. And Life Hacks is a show that used to be called The Surgery, The Sunday Surgery. It's a show all about issues affecting young people. Just open the floor. Any questions that you have around a topic, we're there to help or to be there to know that you're not alone, and find a bit of solace when sometimes being young can be quite a daunting prospect, especially over the last couple of years.
And what do you like listening to, Vic, except for Radio 1, obviously?
At the moment, I'm going through a real Motown revival phase. Mm-hmm. Every morning, I like to put on a little bit of Otis Redding or a little bit of Diana Ross and the Supremes. Or I don't know what it is. I think it's a short, sharp hit of pure, unadulterated euphoria. I like to have a proper dance around my kitchen, like there is no one watching. I live alone anyway, but it's just joy that no one can take away from you.
So you obviously love your music. Mm. It would be difficult for you to choose 8 discs to take to the island, I'm sure.
I think so, although I would say that every part of your life has a soundtrack, so I'd use those moments, those coming of age moments, or those really special times where I discovered the building blocks of myself, of who I was going to become. Mm. And think what accompanied them, what was the soundtrack.
And that brings me to our Desert Island Discs archive, really. There are so many treasures to discover in there, and all this audio archive of some brilliant guests throughout the years.
I love Desert Island Discs. I remember listening to it right from being a tiny, tiny child with my mum in the car. She continues to do so. And even when I go back to Newcastle and I'm with my family, we'll make sure we're in the car at the right time to hear it, because it's just it was our thing.
So we're going to kind of revisit some classic episodes from the archive. And we're going to start with Hollywood royalty, Tom Hanks. Oh. Do you have a favourite Tom Hanks film?
Yeah, Forrest Gump. I mean, it's probably one of my favourite films, just hands down. I can't remember how old I was when I saw it, but it was the first film that made me cry, basically. Yeah. And you don't really ever forget that. And it just stays with you. It stays with everyone. I would say Forrest Gump.
Well, I would warn you that Tom Hanks's Desert Island Discs may make you cry, the whole thing's, but it will make you laugh as well. Yeah. And like Forrest Gump, it has an extraordinary soundtrack. He's really into his music, which fans of his will already know. He was cast away in 2016 by Kirsty Young. And of course, he's also played a man marooned on a desert island.
Yes.
In Castaway.
Yeah.
Left to survive. Not sure that was much on his mind when he was choosing his Desert Island Discs, or in fact, too much help. He talks about how he became an actor, the pressures of fame and that kind of thing. But he also, of course, reflects on his childhood, and that is some of the most emotional content. And he tells a beautiful story about how hard his dad worked when he was bringing him up when he was young. His parents split up, and this is Tom recalling how he and his father moved around a lot.
10 houses in 5 years. Yeah. This was to do with your father's employment, right?
Yeah, he was in the restaurant business. Was a very, you know, it's a very vagabond. He got out of the Navy and he was working in a coffee shop in Berkeley, California. And there was a cute waitress and they met and they got married and they had 4 kids. It's somewhere in the midst of that 11 years, they realized they had absolutely nothing in common. And broke up. My dad would get a phone call at 10 o'clock at night from a buddy of his who needs desperately a head chef. And my dad would say, I'll be there at 8 a.m. And we would pack up a car and we would drive from Sacramento to my aunt's house in San Mateo, California. My dad would start the next day. It's kind of like being a professional dishwasher for a living, you know. You got to wash those dishes, so off you go.
He makes gotta wash those dishes sound like he should put it on a T-shirt. I just love the lilt of his voice and the gravity and the fact that there's always a smile and a laugh in there.
Yeah.
It's one of the most recognizable voices of all time.
So his discs themselves, his Desert Island Discs track choices are really eclectic. Dean Martin, some Dusty Springfield, the Beatles, very early Beatles track, but also a bit of LL Cool J.
Oh, Of course he does. Of course Tom Hanks likes a bit of LL Cool J. Remember when Tom Hanks was in like a Carly Rae Jepsen music video? Or like a Justin... I swear he did something with Justin Bieber. I
mean, a cool collab.
The man's a legend.
I mean, also in Toy Story. I mean,
yeah.
Even if he'd only done the Toy Story franchise, that would have been enough for a place in the history books. So, you know, you talked about this kind of iconic voices and icons, and we have been adding them to the Desert Island Discs archive even quite recently. I got the chance to interview Sophia Loren, which was an incredible experience. This was during lockdown, so she was at home in Italy. At the age of 86, just as charismatic as she ever was when she broke through when she was still a teenager. And I'm sure you already know as a regular listener, Vic, that our guests get to choose a book and also a luxury item. And the luxury item can't be practical. This is one of the kind of rules of Desert Island Discs. But Sophia Loren wanted to bend that rule because she wanted to choose a pizza oven.
A pizza oven? I cannot live without a pizza. I'm a Neapolitan, invented pizza. So if there was a pizza oven on the island, I would turn it into a little corner of Naples and it would make me feel at home and I would eat very well.
And what is the secret to great pizza dough? I mean, in your breakthrough role, we watched you make pizza. You played a pizza girl.
You have to really have the right moment for it. It's like writing a poem, cooking a pizza, let's face it. So if you don't feel like it, don't do it. But if you feel like it, then you have the time of your life.
Now, Sophia, within the rules, I'm not supposed to give you a luxury that has a practical application, technically, but because these pizzas are poetic, I'm going to allow it on the basis that you are going to use them to create works of art.
Okay.
So it's actually technically a work of art.
Okay.
I mean, right?
Yeah. That's not practical. Work of art's not practical, but it's lovely.
Oh, exactly. You can also find George Clooney, Judi Dench and Michael Caine. Their programmes are in our archive, if you like your film stars, as well as directors including Christopher Nolan and the brilliant Steve McQueen, one of my all-time favourite episodes. He describes Prince in that as, when he first heard Prince, it was like the Beatles and James Brown had a baby.
Oh.
Have you ever heard a better description of Prince than that?
It's so,
it doesn't exist.
On the nose.
Yeah.
Completely on the nose.
He's nailed it. He so often does. But of course, you don't have to be a global superstar to be given a invitation to go to our island. In 2020, I cast away Sinead Burke. She's a teacher, an activist and a podcaster, and she's passionate about fashion. She was actually on the cover of Vogue in 2019 and has been a contributing editor to the magazine. Sinead also has a genetic condition which causes restricted growth. She's 3 feet 5 inches tall, just over a metre. And she's now in her early 30s, but even at such a young age, has campaigned for a very long time for greater inclusivity for people with disabilities. And she's also taken her message to the President of Ireland and to the Obamas in the White House, which is hugely impressive. As you can imagine, she's very passionate about language. That's very important to her. She calls herself a little person. And we found out more about that in her episode.
You successfully campaigned to get the Irish Language Dictionary to include a direct translation of Little Person. Tell me how that came about.
Part of being a teacher and a primary school teacher in Ireland, you have to study Irish. And I remember being kind of 17 doing my final year exams and having to go into the oral exam. And the first question that you're usually asked in that environment is Inis dom fuadsa, three Irish words that mean tell me about yourself. And I remember being nervous, not necessarily about the exam, but because I couldn't describe myself in language that I was comfortable with. And I ended up calling myself a dwarf, not a word that I use in English, but had to pass the exam. And I was afraid of making something up and being marked down. And when I finished school and was in college and graduated, I kind of thought, you know, there has to be a way to change this. Language has to evolve. So boldly, I just emailed Fergus na Gaeilge, who is the government department responsible for the Irish language. And the direct translation of Little Person is Dhuine Beag. And within 48 hours, it was in the dictionary. And wow. Sometimes you just have to ask.
48 hours. What a woman.
Sometimes you just have to ask. Shy Ben's getting out.
Exactly. That's what we say in our part.
That's what we say. What an amazing, amazing woman. I actually saw her at a big event. I think it was at the Fashion Awards. She was giving out an award. I remember the audience being absolutely enraptured because she was so funny. Mm. She was so warm and funny, but also clearly very powerful. And you can hear that in that clip. You can hear what a force to be reckoned with, but for all the right reasons.
Yeah. And, you know, talking about language, you studied languages at uni, yeah. didn't you, Vic?
Yeah, that's actually brought back memories of oral exams. And I genuinely went, I remember going to my final year Spanish oral and I fell off my bike on the way in. I was covered in blood, gravel all over me. I was a very poor cyclist. I should definitely not have cycled to that exam. And didn't do great. I was a bit sort of dazed. And when I got my transcript back from that exam, it said literally what she just said. I think Victoria just made up words. Just made up some Spanish.
Well, obviously, Sinead brings a lot of power to the archive, but I have to say there's plenty of laughter in there as well, if you should wish to find it. I would like to point you in the direction of someone from our neck of the woods, from Middlesbrough, actually, Bob Mortimer.
Oh, yes.
Are you a fan?
Yeah. I did a podcast with him not long ago.
If you didn't call it Vic Loves Bob, I'm going to be really
upset. That's why I should have done that. Yes, I've always been a fan. I mean, everyone in Newcastle is.
Right.
You brought up
exactly.
on him.
Yes, exactly. Part of the culture. And yeah. He's been making us laugh for more than 30 years. But it was a different side to him that we saw in his Desert Island Discs. We love his amazing tales on Would I Lie to You? But I can tell you that this next one is definitely true. We only allow true stories on DID. He had quite a tale to tell about how he burned down his childhood home.
Yeah, that's true. I was counting my fireworks up and I lit some sparklers. It said on the packet of sparklers, not suitable for indoor use. To me, that meant that they're okay for indoor use. That if they need to put the warning on, it means, yeah, you'll usually get away with it, of course. But, yeah, and the sparklers lit the box of fireworks and I ran the box through to the kitchen, let them go off, then spent about an hour trying to get rid of all the marks out of the lino and off the cabinets, walked back into the living room and it was fully ablaze. Walked round to next door to the two old ladies that live next door and I said, my house is on fire. And they said, you know, we thought it was.
The first thing we should say, Vic, probably don't try this at home.
No, no.
Definitely.
I feel like there was a time of our lives when we all used to think about sparklers a lot more than we do now.
And I don't know if this is just a northeast thing you might identify with, but there's bonfire night's a really big thing.
Huge.
Massive
it's the biggest
thing.
Night. It's bigger than Halloween. For us, it was bigger than Christmas. We weren't that bothered about Christmas, yeah. But bonfire, big. We'd always have a massive party.
Did you have Easter jump in the next morning?
Yeah, yeah, we'd jump over it.
Yeah, don't
even
do that as well.
Even the same night as it started to go down.
Yeah.
But I absolutely don't do that either.
Bob's music choices, pretty phenomenal. Some Joni Mitchell tells a great story about going to see her live. Kate Bush as well, who's a huge fan of Genesis. He also admits that as a young student, he sat in his room listening to Genesis. I think they pretty much got him through law school. And if you're fans of comedy, if you love your comedy and you want to find more comedians, you've got plenty to choose from. You've got Dawn French, Ricky Gervais is in the archive. Victoria Wood's episode is absolutely incredible. That's a really powerful one. That's one of those that you will send to a friend who's going through something difficult. Sarah Millican, Lenny Henry, Joe Brand.
What a hall.
They're
of
all in
fame.
There. Yeah. So where shall we go next? I mean, over the years, Desert Island Discs has heard plenty of stories of people who've followed a dream that they had since childhood or fostered a passion that they nursed in teenage years and then kind of made it into their life's work. And I think that accurately describes our next castaway, who I think you might be a fan of, Pat McGrath.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone that I work with, whenever we're doing anything around fashion or beauty, is a fan. She is like the mother of beauty, and especially for those of us with darker skin. She's an inspiration, but she's also someone that we thank for catering for us at a time when there's not always been options. She's opened so many doors and made us feel beautiful.
She is. She's a creative genius, yeah. But also a fantastically creative spirit. She is also often described as the most influential makeup artist in the world. I mean, she is just A-list, multimillionaire,
yeah,
fashion's first billionaire, I believe, first woman of colour to become a billionaire in the beauty industry. She's now based in the US, but she grew up here in the UK. And in this clip, she talks about her mother who arrived here in the UK from Jamaica and her passion for beauty.
I had a lot of skincare, which was my mother's skincare. She didn't like me to touch, but I did use it. And then I'd have one lipstick or so out of her hundreds of lipsticks. And I would use that lipstick as an eyeshadow. Very futuristic. And that was my look.
And this inventive approach might have stemmed from your mum's attitude to makeup, because she had some very inventive ways of working around the scarcity of makeup that was available for black skin.
Oh, yeah. She even used cocoa powder. She came in from the kitchen with cocoa powder all over her face. And she's like, this is the right tone of powder. And she had dusted it on her face and she looked amazing. So that's what I ended up doing as well, was making products that I needed backstage. That stems from my mother. If you can't find it, you can't buy it, make it.
And do you remember the first thing that you made when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, a moisturiser. I made my own moisturiser for my dolls and myself. And I mixed oil and water together, whipped it, put it in a fridge, and it looked like a cream. So I celebrated for months with my own cream that I'd made, and I packed that all over my face. I was shining like a Belisha beacon for months.
So you were already familiar with Pat McGrath and her work and yeah. A fan of hers. I wonder what you think of what she was saying about her mum there, Vic.
I mean, you can see where she gets her innovative spirit from and her openness to working out what to do, yeah. Working out new methods and techniques. And something about her is that she's continued to drive that even as she's got older. And you know, beauty is an industry that's constantly evolving. It's constantly changing. It's full of new techniques and new technology. And often if people get stuck in their ways, they get left behind. And she said, no, I am absolutely not going to do that. I'm going to continue to grow. I'm going to really respect the generation coming through. And that is often an Instagram generation and yeah. A lot of techniques that may seem like fads, but she's recognised them as trends yeah. And the fact that actually let's move with it and let's just make this more accessible and all-encompassing for as many people. And that's what she stands for. So as well as being a mogul, she's an influencer and she's, yeah, this mother of beauty who seemingly really cares.
As well, I think she really carries that DIY ethos that obviously yeah. Goes right back to her mum, but also found its expression in punk and the style magazines of the 80s that she was so involved with and into the 90s. And she's kind of kept that with her as well. And you can hear that reflected in her music. Diana Ross, Missy Elliott, David Bowie particularly, you know, Malcolm McLaren's in there as well, I think. But she says that she and her mum were both obsessed with David Bowie throughout the kind of 70s and 80s. He's her biggest influence back then, and particularly as she started going clubbing in the new romantic period and having these incredible kind of makeup looks that she would wear on a night out.
Yeah, I think she's so brilliant. I love that. I loved hearing that.
Another castaway with a powerful personal story about their family was fitness trainer Joe Wicks. Now, there's nobody more motivational than Joe Wicks. If anyone can persuade you to make something healthy to eat very quickly or to get off the sofa and give your best for 20 minutes, it is Joe. But actually, as well as being the nation's favourite PE teacher during lockdown, you know, he talk to us about his experiences of growing up with a dad who was an addict in his childhood. And that was really emotional. It was a different side to Joe that we heard on the podcast. This is a part of his life not so many people know about, the shadow of his dad's drug addiction during his childhood. Let's have a listen.
I remember being in secondary school and I just remember someone asked me about, someone said something about my dad and I was just so angry at the time because it was like, you know, again he'd relapse and again I was disappointed and let down. And I just remember thinking like, I don't want to talk about my dad, I hate him. And I only ever said that once and I've never really admitted that. I've never really admitted that to my dad, but it was just a reaction and I felt so bad because I didn't hate my dad, I hated what drugs were doing to him, you know, doing to my family. So it was an angry thought and I suppose I let it out and I felt instantly bad. And I remember just thinking, what a horrible thing to say about your dad. But yeah, anyway, now, look, I love my dad. It's an emotional feeling like that, but I've had that anger and that's completely passed. And even recently, I've started to do some meditation and I'm starting to just let go of negative energy. And like the antidote to addiction is connection and love. And that's what I've learned.
Joe Wicks, he is such an inspiring person and he cares so much about the well-being of obviously children and young people, you know, during lockdown, doing his fitness sessions, but also his readers and his fans. He's all about being healthy to support your well-being and make you feel better as well as the kind of fitness side of it.
Yeah, I remember in the lockdown just thinking, I wonder how Joe Wicks feels. He's carrying the weight of a lot of people on his shoulders. What's so heartbreaking about that clip of Joe is that he's clearly carried this right up until that moment that he told you. He said he'd never said that out loud before. Yeah. And the pain and the guilt that he must have felt for having once said aloud that he hated his dad when he doesn't, but he felt that and he's totally entitled to feel that given the situation that he was in.
Yeah.
But he carried that, and it's the most pain when you've said you hate a loved one, along with the pain of everything else that must have been going on around him. That must have been a really cathartic moment. And I'm glad that he could let it out.
Joe's music choices were pretty eclectic. He chose a bit of Bob Marley, some Dwayne Johnson singing You're Welcome to remind him of his family. Yes. And also some George Ezra, which I think was for his brother. They'd done a very special road trip and that was kind of their anthem. He loves his music and his luxury, like many, many castaways over the years, was a musical instrument. He chose a guitar. I think that'd be a good thing to have on a desert island.
That would keep you entertained. It would be cathartic, therapeutic. It would be educational because you could just keep learning. There's no end to the scope.
So, Vic, so far we've focused on some of our more recent castaways. But, of course, you know, this is an archive that stretches back some 80 years. So we're going to go a little bit further back to hearing an edition that I would strongly recommend. This comes from the 1980s. And it is the great Maya Angelou, great African-American writer, activist. She was cast away by Michael Parkinson in 1988. So she was 60 at this point. She doesn't shrink from discussing the very, very difficult struggles that she went through during her childhood, but she also offered some incredibly humorous and touching moments. And there's this beautiful story. Obviously, she's one of the consummate all-time storytellers. Here she is, telling a story about her mum, who was quite clearly, just like her daughter, a force to be reckoned with.
In 1959, I was going to go to New York, and I was living in Southern California, and she in San Francisco, and we like each other. So I called and asked her to meet me in the middle of the state because I was going to New York. She said, "Oh, baby," and this is the way she... She's about 5'4", 5'3 and a half. I'm 6 foot. Right? Mm. She still talks to me the same way. "Oh, baby, mother's just so glad to. But mother wanted to see you too because I'm going to see." So I said, "You're going to see what?" She said, "I'm going to become a seaman." "Oh, why, Mom?" I mean, she owned hotels, right? She was a surgical nurse. She's a real estate broker. "Go to see?" She said, "Yes, because they told me they wouldn't let black women in their union." You know what I told them? "Baby, I told them, you want to bet?" She said, "I'll put my foot in that door up to my hip. So women of every color will walk over my foot, get in that union, get aboard a ship, and go to sea." And when she retired in 1980, the black, white, Hispanic, and Asian women ship out of San Francisco. And they gave a party for her, Michael. It was wonderful. They called this little bitty woman Mother of the Sea.
That image of putting her foot in that door up to my hip.
I know.
It's exactly how you imagine Maya Angelou paving the way, which she did, and knowing that her mother had that attitude, that her mother had that assertiveness and passion and power, it all makes sense. Mm. I love Maya Angelou so much. I'm so grateful to Maya Angelou for everything that she gave all of us, but particularly black women.
Mm. Yeah.
It means the world. My mum was the one who introduced me to Maya Angelou because my mum felt that she learned and grew and flourished from her words, and she wanted to pass that on to me, and it means the world.
And I love the way that she tells stories as well. Obviously, you know, you can hear her literary voice is very close, actually, to her spoken voice. It's so lovely to hear her, you know, to be able to actually still hear her voice. And she's full of those little pearls of wisdom that you can just kind of wear and carry around with you. You know, I mean, when somebody shows you who they are, believe them the first time, for example. But also, I put my foot in that door up to my hip. Yes. I'm like, yoink, I'm having that. Thank you, Maya Angelou. Her music choices, obviously, also fantastic. Ray Charles, Roberta Flack, Stevie Wonder, all in there.
Oh, this
in her
is my
episode,
kind of playlist.
Right?
Yeah.
So she was 60 when she recorded that episode in the 80s. She died in 2014 at the age of 86. So really special to kind of hear her at that time in her life as well. She had so much life left to live. It's extraordinary.
And her life will continue. Her legacy is like no other.
Vic Hope, thank you so much for joining me. And I hope that you have played the game yourself. For a Desert Island Discs listener, obviously, do you know your 8 tracks, your book, your luxury item that you would take to the island?
I think about it a lot and things swap in and out.
What would have to be in there? Because, you know, we have to choose a track to save. So your essential track to save from the waves. It's the hardest question. I always leave it to last, and people always by that point have forgotten that I'm going to ask, and then every time they're like, oh my God, track to save.
It's hard. I think, it's a toss-up. So Can't Hurry Love by Diana Ross and the Supremes was like my mum's favourite song. And when I was little, she used to sing it with me. We used to make up dance routines. And it also felt like her words to me when I was getting a little bit older, and it feels like if I'm looking back on my relationship with my mother, that is the song that accompanies it. And it just is.
And what about your book and your luxury item?
I have been thinking about this, and I definitely in a few years time would change my mind. So I'm thinking maybe I might take my clarinet.
Nice, for the luxury, perfect.
Because I haven't played it for so long, and I played it all through school, and I did that thing that all kids do where I was embarrassed, because you have to carry around this little briefcase thing, and I didn't want to just bundle it into my locker, didn't really want to do it, didn't want to have to miss break. And the truth is, what a brilliant thing to be doing an instrument, to be learning an instrument. And I am grateful that I had that, and it's still under my bed, and I haven't taken it out for about... 15 years.
We'd have to give you a new reed probably at this point.
I would need a new reed. You'd have to do the suck in to soften it up. And for the book, I think I'd take Half the Yellow Sun by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, because my mum grew up during the Biafran War. She grew up running away from air raids and housing soldiers and being hungry. And she's told me all these stories about that, but she was a child, so she didn't know the socioeconomic or political situation, what the context was. And for me, Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie filled in the gaps. Mm-hmm. She helped me understand what my mum's story was set against, the backdrop of it. And so I learned so much. So that book was an education for me, as well as something that rooted me to my cultural heritage. And I could read it over and over again and still find more, and not find out more just about the world, but more about myself. And I think that's what a good book does. So, yeah, you lose yourself, you find yourself. You shift your perspective on the world, and you shift your perspective on yourself.
Fantastic, Vic. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. Genuinely, I've absolutely loved this.
We have to remember that all the programmes in the archive are a snapshot of someone's life and their choices at the moment of the recording. And it's worth being aware that not all of the castaways' reputations have aged well, but there are hundreds of episodes to choose from, so do make your way to BBC Sounds and dive in.